From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. In the next month, many La Crosse residents and businesses will be getting an extra bill, what's known as a stormwater utility. The city created the new utility, and it's similar to existing water and sewer ones. The new stormwater utility is designed to help meet tougher federal stormwater discharge standards, approved in 2006. The new regulations should reduce the amount of localized flooding that occurs on many city streets during torrential rain. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis talked with Bernie Lenz from the city's engineering department and La Crosse Public Works Director Dale Hexum about issues surrounding the new stormwater utility.
US EPA really promulgated as part of the Clean Water Act stormwater regulations and broke it down into a phased implementation for large municipalities, large metropolitan areas, cities like Madison, like Milwaukee, like Minneapolis, St. Paul were required many years ago, actually, in advance of La Crosse-sized communities to implement stormwater regulations, all really aimed at stormwater quality, improving the quality of the water falling on impervious areas, on streets, on buildings, going into receiving streams, because there's a fair amount of sediment and dirt and debris that gets washed into a river, a lake, or whatever. So that was called phase one. La Crosse was under a phase two implementation because, again, the size of the community. And under those regulations, again, they were aimed at improving water quality. They had nothing really to do with water volume or quantity. So I want to emphasize that the permit requirements are all aimed at improving water quality. So DNR went through a process of establishing criteria to meet the EPA mandates, which they then passed on to cities like La Crosse in the form of a permit. And that permit requires us to do a number of activities to improve water quality. Number one, it required us to determine what the quality of our water currently was and then to establish what we needed to do to improve that. And they initially established a reduction of suspended solids by 20% from what we were originally doing as the initial threshold, expanding to 40% a number of years later. And then in addition to that, they also required the city to develop what is known as an illicit discharge program, meaning that we would have to establish ordinances that would prohibit people from dumping like motor oil and paint and other chemicals into a storm sewer, into a catch basin, and to be able to monitor where that came from and to enforce those kinds of rules, and also to engage the public in a public education and information program. So there's a number of activities that have to be done in order to meet the requirements of our permit. So the city then embarked on creating a stormwater ordinance to put in place those rules and regulations. Then how do we pay for those types of activities? Because the city wasn't only concerned with stormwater quality, improving the quality and meeting our permit, but also we have neighborhood flooding issues. People wanted to see more dollars put into alleviating those neighborhood flooding issues. So we're dealing with quality and quantity both. So it's a major, major issue for the city of La Crosse.
I'm going to get into a lot of those issues in just a moment, but I wanted to maybe take a step back just so people understand the basic nuts and bolts of the sewer system. I know the stormwater goes into what is considered a stormwater sewer system.
Correct.
And then you have the sewer system that deals with household waste,
right, with wastewater
and that type of thing.
Right.
What is the difference between the two? How are they treated?
Let's deal first with the wastewater, the sewage. We basically have two systems in the city of La Crosse, as does almost every community throughout the country. One deals with wastewater, with contaminated water, with what you basically flush down your toilet. That is a separate wastewater sewer system. All of that wastewater, which amounts to about 9 million gallons per day, flows to the Isle of Plume Wastewater Treatment Plant. And if you're not familiar with Isle of Plume Wastewater Treatment Plant is, it's down below the brewery on Isle of Plume right next to Huska Park. That treats, again, only the wastewater component. The storm water that falls, you know, whether it's snow melt or rain or whatever, is in a separate sewer system totally devoted to stormwater. So the stormwater currently is untreated, is collected in a, and eventually flows either to La Crosse River, for instance, may flow east to the Ebner Cooley drainage ditch or the Pamel Creek drainage ditch, all of which eventually ends up in the Mississippi River, whether it goes to the La Crosse River, the Black, whatever. And that, as I said, is not currently treated, and that's the component that the stormwater rules and regulations want us to address to improve the water quality going into the receiving streams.
There's no mandate to create a plant that would treat stormwater before it's discharged into the Mississippi, for example.
No, there was a mandate to come up with a plan of how to treat it, like Dale said, the 20 or 40% levels. Our plan really focuses on regional treatment facilities, wet ponds, infiltration basins, and also just disconnecting it. La Crosse is blessed to, you know, basically live in a very sandy area. Traditional stormwater, you collect it in a roof, it comes down a pipe. That pipe goes directly either to the street or to the storm sewer, which brings it directly to the river. If we can break that cycle and take that water and get it to our sandy soils, that water is going to infiltrate. The dirt and sediments in it are going to settle out on the land rather than being directly transported to the river. So the idea is to break that cycle. So another part of our plan is the stormwater utility credits. If people do things to reduce the water on their property, then we don't have to do it in these regional treatment facilities.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. Our guests today include City of La Crosse Public Works Director Dale Hexum and Bernie Lenz of the Engineering Department. We're talking about the implementation of a stormwater utility in the city. What is a stormwater utility?
Well, the stormwater utility is really a mechanism to generate revenue to pay for stormwater issues, for meeting our discharge permit from the DNR, and also for improving the capacity, the volume capacity of our storm sewer system. So the utility portion of stormwater here is really just the funding mechanism, taking it off of the tax rolls, billing, setting up a billing structure so that the people that are, the properties that are generating stormwater are billed an equitable fee for the stormwater that they generate and how clean that stormwater is, because as we're pointing out, we're really dealing with two components here of stormwater. One is the quality, how clean is the water going into the receiving streams, and if it's not very clean, what can people and property owners and the city do to clean it up? And secondly, what's the volume of water that's going into the storm sewer system, because that volume contributes to the flooding issues that we have not only when the rivers are high at flood stage, but also when we experience, as we have in the past years, the intense cloudbursts when in a half-hour period of time we may get 2-3, pick a number, inches of rain, which causes localized neighborhood flooding, and we have a number of those intersections that flood and the water stays up, comes up over the curb, and does impact or pose threats to adjoining houses and property, because many of those properties are not technically up out of the floodplain or the flood in fringe type area. So the utility is, again, just a funding mechanism. And that's been a misconception when we were discussing setting up the stormwater utility, because there were people out there that presumed DNR was mandating a stormwater utility, that EPA was mandating a stormwater utility, and frankly, they don't care how we pay for it. They just want us to meet the requirements.
Stormwater utility is really an equity situation. It's a user-based fee. You know, right now, you're paying for your stormwater on your taxes. So if residential properties pay 57% of the taxes in the city of La Crosse, they only produce 28% of the water. So they're paying an undue, you know, burden of the stormwater costs. Tax exempt properties, you know, don't pay anything, yet they produce stormwater. Switching it to a utility, you pay by the amount of stormwater you produce. So it's an equity thing. It also gives people, you know, incentive to reduce the amount of stormwater they produce. I always use the example of any other utility, say a gas. If we had one big gas main coming into the city of La Crosse and we paid for it on taxes, property taxes, you would pay based on the value of your property, not by how much gas you used. You would have no incentive to turn down your thermostat, no incentive to put in new windows. Mm-hmm. Businesses wouldn't look at the equipment they use to reduce the amount of gas they use. They would just look at the initial purchase cost because it's based on your property. You couldn't adjust your fees. A stormwater utility puts the fees on the people that are producing the stormwater, not on property value. So it's an equity user-based system.
Is it a little more difficult to determine what people owe, or how do you go about doing that, you know, given the fact that there is a big difference? There may be a homeowner with rain barrels collecting, you know, it's a lot different than a business with a 500-car parking lot.
And it is more difficult, John, because we can't put in a meter-to-meter stormwater like we can with the water that you're drinking. We can meter that with an actual physical meter. In the case of stormwater, it's based on the size of the property and how many square feet of impervious area that's on that property, impervious area being roofs, sidewalks, parking lots, concrete, asphalt, that doesn't allow for stormwater to infiltrate down into the ground. The way we came up with those figures, and we basically have impervious areas for each and every parcel of property throughout the city of La Crosse, we depend on aerial photography, number one, to give us a picture, a mappable, a scalable, two-scale picture of the city of La Crosse that we can then use to actually measure the impervious area for each property, along with doing some field verification of those properties as a test to make sure that what we're seeing from the aerial photography and the mapping is accurate. So we've come up with impervious areas for each and every parcel of land, which then translates into what are known as equivalent runoff units. We establish that based on an average residential parcel size, and then apply that across the board to all properties to determine how many equivalent runoff units each and every parcel of land will be responsible for and for which they will be receiving a bill for stormwater.
So could you break it down by, you know, how much will the average homeowner pay compared to the business with the, you know, 100-car parking lot? What is the difference there?
A homeowner, if a single-family resident throughout the city of La Crosse, will pay one equivalent runoff unit, regardless of their parcel size. We didn't go out and physically measure each and every parcel of land for residential units. Frankly, that's would be a very labor-intensive, costly approach. So every residential unit pays one ERU at a rate of $53.90 per year. Then that one equivalent runoff unit applied to a parking lot or to is applied to a non-residential property where they may have, for instance, 30,000 square feet of impervious area. So that 30,000 square feet is divided by the average residential unit, which is about 2,800, and it may come down to this business is now responsible for 10 ERUs, equivalent runoff units, and we use that process throughout the rest of the city to identify each and every business and non-residential. And again, as Bernie pointed out, this covers also the tax-exempt property, so churches, University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, for instance, Gunderson Lutheran, Skemp Medical Center, each have a lot of area of parking lots and roofs, and they will be responsible for a stormwater utility bill.
So, Bernie, how can people reduce that $53 a year cost if they want to do that?
You can reduce your cost by either controlling the amount of pollution leaving your property or controlling the volume of water coming off your property.
And to do that?
The ordinance is you can get a percent reduction based on the percent total suspended solid leaving your property. So you look at your total suspended solid annually, and if you can reduce that by 40%, you get a 40% reduction in your bill. The volume of water is based on the 10-year peak rainfall, so we're looking at a really big rainfall, 2.5-3 inches of rain in 2-3 hours. That big dump, if you can reduce the peak, that's when our systems have the problems. That's when we have intersection floodings. We want to control that water on the property rather than have it in our pipes. For every percent reduction off that peak, you get a percent reduction in your bills. So you can get a total of 80% credit. No more than 50% can come from one or the other. So you can have 30% water quality, 50% peak, for a total of 80% reduction in your bill.
So you can get your bill down to what, about 10 bucks a year?
For residential, yep.
And, yeah. And what are some steps you need to take to do that? And I assume there has to be some sort of a check and balance system the city will come out and make sure that you're doing what you say you're doing.
Well, anything that you can do to reduce the water quality or water quantity leaving your property is eligible. We've tried to set up a system that make the admin costs for both the city and for the residents reduced, so without taking away flexibility. So we've come up with what we call kind of quick credits, where we've done the calculations for you. So a residential property, they can put in a rain garden or put in rain barrels. We got some very simple steps, make sure it's mosquito-proof, make sure it's 50 gallons, make sure 200 square feet of roof comes with that barrel. You do these steps, and you can just sign it yourself saying, yep, I did them. Send us a photograph showing it's in there, and you get the credits. You also sign something saying, I'm going to maintain this and have it there, and I'm giving the city the right to come in and look at it any time, and if they find it that I'm in violation, it's a 5 ERU fine. So theoretically, if somebody gets 50% credit, and we look at it once every 10 years with that high fine, if they were fibbing for 9 years and we caught it on the 10th, we would recover our costs. So we're trying to make it simple for people to do it. We don't want to have a high administrative burden. We want to have the money that comes in from the stormwater utility go to cleaning the water and reducing the peaks. We don't want to spend it on admin time, having somebody go and inspect these every year. Like I said, for residential properties, we have those two quick credits, the rain barrel and the rain garden, but we don't want to keep innovation away. There's a different product coming across my desk every week. So if somebody wants to hire, the newest, greatest thing and put it in their property, if it's reducing stormwater peak or cleaning the water, they can get credit for that. But then the burden goes on them to supply us the calculations. So they would need a stamp signed engineered plan showing us what the percent reduction is. And the reason we did that is if you stamp a plan, I'm a professional engineer. I make my living as an engineer. I need that stamp to make my living. If I, I'm not doing a good job or fibbing and then I get turned in, I can be debarred and basically lose my job. So by having someone stamp it, they got skin in the game now. That takes the burden off the city to review that. We can just look at that, say it's stamped, here's the numbers, and apply that credit. For the quick credits, if a homeowner doesn't want to hire an engineer, they can do a rain barrel or rain garden, follow the easy steps that they have, and they can sign that themselves. They wouldn't need to hire an engineer. And it also, we won't have to review all those. We know that they followed the steps. We have the photos. We know it's good. We are looking at a program to kind of inspect these, whether we would do it when the meter reader's out there reading the meter, whether we would use students in the summer, interns, to go look at it. We haven't developed an inspection program. There will be some sort of check and balance here. But really the idea is, make it simple for the folks to get these credits in, make it simple for us to inspect them. We want credits. We want people to control the water. If people can control the water on their property, that's water the city doesn't have to control in our pipes. If they can clean the water and get, that's any removal that they have is credit towards our permit requirements for DNR, and that's a regional pond we don't have to build. So, you know, we want these credits. We want people to partake in them. We want to keep the administrative burden down for the city and for the residents.
And Bernie really was highlighting the residential credit program. There's also the ability for non-residential properties, whether it's tax-exempt properties, whether it's the large auto dealers, or basically any other non-residential property also has the opportunity to do things on their property to reduce the volume of stormwater, which Bernie addressed as the peak flow, or the improve the quality of the stormwater leaving their property. So the same really applies to all of the non-residential properties. It's a little more rigorous than a residential. There are some quick credits available for biocells and some permeable pavement credits and that kind of thing. But it is a little more rigorous because a lot of stormwater, as you can quite imagine, comes off of the impervious areas for the institutions, the Gundersons, the Skemps, the car dealers, the large roofed industrial park areas. So there's a big, big contribution of stormwater coming from those. And they also have the opportunity, if they have property available, to reduce their stormwater liability by doing things on their property, as Bernie's pointed out, keeping it on their property, doing a pond, for instance, and reducing the flow of water coming into the city system. That's really what we'd like to see.
Do these changes, the rain barrels, the rain gardens, going from an impervious pavement to a pervious pavement, do they cost a lot of money to do?
The rain barrels and rain gardens on residential properties are relatively inexpensive. On commercial industrial properties, those that have the opportunity, as Bernie is pointing out, to simply disconnect their roof drains, for instance, if they have roof drains coming down the side of their building that right now go into a storm sewer, into the pipes or whatever, that's a relatively inexpensive change that they can usually make without expending a large amount of money. Really depends on how far those properties owners want to go and what kind of credit they may end up with and how long it would take to pay back the cost of making those changes. If they have to redo their parking lot, for instance, that's currently concrete or asphalt, they really should be looking at the impervious or the pervious pavement and talk with the contractors, talk with Mathey, for instance. They've done pervious paving, pervious asphalt. And I think, in fact, UWL here has done some of that also, as has Western Technical College. So they really need to do some analyses on how much it's going to cost and what kind of credit reduction that would be to their annual bill, and see how many years it would take to pay that investment back, and see if it in fact is a just like you do when you're doing an energy analysis of your building and determining if you're going to change your lighting system, how many years it's going to take through reduction in energy usage, in this case reduction in stormwater, to pay back that capital investment. So these things do come with a cost. There is no question about that.
What you're going to see, you know, right away is people looking at impervious surfaces they don't need. And we're already seeing that. They're parking lots that aren't used. They're just paved. People are you know, taking those up and turning them to grass. Then you're going to get the low-hanging fruit type areas where maybe somebody has a roof that drains directly to their parking lot. That parking lot has a catch basin that goes to the pipe and out to the river. They can simply put a gutter on there and direct that water to the back of their property into a grassed area and infiltrate it and take care of it. You know, that's a very cheap, easy fix. 80% credit is pretty high credit, so those things are going to happen right away. But then it's going to take several years, maybe 3, maybe 10 years for some of these other changes. It wouldn't be worth ripping up your parking lot and putting impervious parking back. The payback wouldn't be there. But if you're redoing your parking lot anyway, the payback's there, or to change the grade of that parking lot and drain it to a biocell rather than drain it directly to the street. So those are the kinds of changes you'll see through time. And just like when the wastewater treatment plant went to a utility, it took 3 to 5 years before we saw the bottom of the flows. You know, the flows started dropping right away, but it was over a period of time that those flows were reduced. Same thing's going to happen with a stormwater utility. People are going to get that low-hanging fruit right away, and then it's going to take 3 to 10 years to, you know, get those other things as parking lots get redone, as buildings get redone. What we're really trying to do is just change the way people look at stormwater. The old way was, let's get it in a pipe and get it to the river as fast as we can. Now we want people to say, how can we reduce what's going to the pipe and treat it in our facilities to save some money? So that's really, it's a shift in philosophy, and you're going to see the low-hanging fruit right away, but it'll take time for it to be fully to see the full effects of the stormwater utility.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. Our guests today include City of La Crosse Public Works Director Dale Hexum and Bernie Lenz of the Engineering Department. We're talking about the implementation of a stormwater utility in the city. I assume that because this is based on the average rainfall for a 10-year period, I think you had said, it doesn't matter in a given year if it rains or not a lot. You're still going to get charged.
That's correct, because in any given year, obviously, as you're pointing out, John, rainfall events and flooding events can be there. 1 year can be catastrophic. The next year can be a drought year. And again, it's not only the stormwater, the rainfall events, but we're also talking about winter. Winter plays a factor in stormwater as well, because eventually if we have a high snow year, all of that snow melt ends up having to go somewhere. So it's not only just in the summertime for rainfall events, but it's really snow melt and the like. And it's a year-round, multi-year program that is really independent of the actual rainfall or storm events that happen, because we have to plan and be able to accommodate stormwater, improve the quality of stormwater, whether it's snow melt or rainfall going into the receiving streams, and also deal with the volume of stormwater that contributes to flooding issues. So those are things that we plan many years in advance. The capital improvement program is a 5-year program, but that's only the 5-year active projects that are on the horizon. We have plans extending far beyond that 5-year planning horizon, because many times it takes not 5 years, but more like 7, 10, even 12 years to really plan for, in this case, stormwater improvements. What do we need to be looking at for changing our outfalls, making accommodations for larger pipe diameters, more stormwater pumping, because, again, in a flood event, there's areas of our city where the storm sewer doesn't work anymore because the rivers basically back up into it and the stormwater pumps have to accommodate that, the added rainfall. So it is a multi-year, long-range program that is just one of many infrastructure programs we have to deal with.
How much money does the city project it will raise?
Generally, what the current ERU value is based on are the new activities required under the stormwater permit, and to some extent what some of our past activities and maintenance work was for the previous storm sewer system, and also looking at the improvements to the stormwater sewer system for capital projects, be it projects for ponds and dust management practices to improve the stormwater quality, or to deal with new capital projects to handle the flooding issues. So I think the initial budget that the $53.90 figure was based on was in the area of $2.4 million. So every year as we progress forward, we will be, as part of the budget process, taking a look at where we are with the capital projects, where we are with meeting the requirements of our discharge permit for the non-volume and quality-related issues, as I mentioned before, things like public information, the illicit discharge monitoring, there's a number of activities that we have to annually report to DNR what our progress has been. So every year we'll be taking a look at the budget, looking at what the projected needs are for meeting the permit and meeting the volume and flooding issues, and then taking a look finally at how does that fit into our current billing policy, and is that $53.90 figure okay for the next budget year? We may find that in a given year, based on other activities and things going on, that we won't have the opportunity to be constructing capital-type projects, so maybe the borrowing that the stormwater utility would be faced with in a budget year would be less for the next budget year, so there may be an adjustment to that stormwater utility charge. What we don't want to see necessarily in the same, we do the same with the water utility for billing for water usage. We don't want to see extremely high peaks and by the same token extremely low valleys where we're constantly changing that charge rate. We want to basically address the long term and have a pretty uniform, realistic figure for what stormwater is costing us.
How soon before the city will begin addressing some of those localized flooding issues? Will it be almost immediately? And how long is it going to take you to address them all?
Well, we really have been all along. Most recently, on the north side of La Crosse, we constructed what's known as the Moore Street Stormwater Lift Station. That was put into operation, I believe, in about 2007. And we have a project underway right now that will extend the collection pipe, the piping going to that stormwater lift station, onto the east on Moore Street and up into a drainage basin. So we've got a number of drainage basin activities like that throughout the city. So it does take a number of years because many of those are multi-million-dollar projects. Really, if you add all of the figures together and project them forward, we're looking at in excess of $10 million for multi-year projects.
That's actually one of the disadvantages, I guess, of a stormwater utility. People start paying this fee and expect, hey, I'm paying the fee. I want this fixed, immediately. And some of them are going to be structural fixes, like Dale says, where we'll build a new pipe or upsize a pipe. But some of these are incremental changes. Some of the flooding problems that have happened in La Crosse are because the pipe was designed to be the right size when it was put in. But through time, a house got torn down and a bigger house got put in. A few more parking stalls got added. A house got torn down and a apartment building got built, or a shopping center and a parking lot. So more and more impervious surfaces appeared, and the pipes are 80 years old and they're the same size. So stormwater utility, the idea is people start treating that water on their property. Hopefully the land is going to start acting more like it did before all this development occurred. When you start controlling those peaks on your property, maybe some of those pipes won't need to be upsized. Maybe just by people now being financially responsible for their water, controlling their water on their property, now some of those pipes are going to function like they were originally designed, because they're seeing the peaks that they were originally designed to see because of people that are controlling it on their property. So we will see structural changes where we go in and build a big pipe, but you're going to see incremental changes too through time. So you got to be some patience there.
I know you've had a series of meetings in June to kind of educate people about this and to get them thinking about ways where they could take advantage of credits and reduce their cost. Is this something the public is greatly aware about, would you say, or is it something that they're going to get that first bill and they're going to say, what is this?
We had over 100 people come through our workshops on residential credits. Some of those have already followed up and submitted their applications. I was a consultant before coming to the city and helped several cities through this process, and you're going to have the whole gamut. There is going to be a big number of folks who, the debates that all last summer that over this that they didn't hear about. Until that bill shows up, they may not see it. And then you're going to have a few that a year from now will be the first time they see the bill and come ask you, about this charge that they've been paying for a year. So you'll see the full gamut. We really are trying to get the education and awareness out there so people are aware of this, they understand why we're doing it, understand the credits are there. Because like I said, we want those credits there. This is really can be a financial savings to the city. If we can get enough people to do things on their property and not have to upsize pipes or not have to build these regional facilities, it's going to save the money overall to the city. It's a lot more expensive to upsize a pipe. It's a lot more expensive to build a regional facility than it is for somebody to do something on their property, put a gutter, collect that water, and get it to the grass rather than going directly to the storm sewer. So when you look at the big picture, don't look at where the money is coming from. Just say, which is the most cost-effective way to treat stormwater? The most cost-effective way to treat stormwater is to treat it at the source. Don't let it get to a pipe and then have to treat it. It goes up 8 or 10-fold once it's in a pipe and you have to treat it. If you can keep it from getting to the pipe to begin with, you're going to save a lot of money. So that's really what the stormwater utility is trying to do, incentivize people to do that on their property. Giving them a cost savings up to 80%, that's a very large credit when you look at statewide what credits are. And that's because we want them to do it. That's the most cost-effective way. That's the way, as a city as a whole, is going to save money.
Bernie Lenz is with La Crosse's engineering department, and Dale Hexum is the director of the Public Works Department in La Crosse. They spoke about the new stormwater utility in the city with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis. Bills for the new utility are set to arrive in the next month. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Strube, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also on Facebook. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.